A King for Israel by Peggy Furness Lee. The hard lesson learned by ancient Israel warns us against the temptation to become like the world. When faced with a difficult problem or situation, where do we turn for a solution? To whom or to what do we appeal in times of great need? Concerning the world today, the Lord has said, "Every man walketh in his own way, and after the image of his own God, whose image is in the likeness of the world." Doctrine and Covenant, section 1, verse 16. In the waning days of Samuel's service as Israel's prophet and judge, the people had a perplexing dilemma. Their desires and choice on that occasion laid the foundation for their eventual captivity and scattering throughout the nations of the earth. The results of their choice teach us lessons that are relevant for our day. The King of Heaven. The Israelites had been free from the rule of an earthly king since their bondage in Egypt. Israel had made a covenant with Jehovah that he would be their God and they would be his people. See Leviticus chapter 26, verse 12. Their sovereign was a heavenly king, Jehovah, who was Jesus Christ, who had brought them through the Red Sea on dry ground, enabled them to conquer the land of Canaan, and preserve them as a nation by calling to leadership a series of judges. Righteous Hannah had prophesied as she dedicated her young child to service at the Lord's tabernacle under Eli, "The Lord shall judge the ends of the earth, and he shall give strength unto his king, and exalt the horn of his anointed." 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 10. Her words look forward to a time when Jesus Christ would rule Israel as judge, king, and Messiah, the Anointed One, a concept also taught by Book of Mormon prophets. See 2 Nephi chapter 6, verse 14, 2 Nephi chapter 10, verse 14, and 2 Nephi chapter 21, verses 1 through 6. But that time was not yet. The Lord called Samuel to be both prophet and judge over all Israel. During Samuel's ministry, the Ark of God, once lost in battle to the Philistines, was returned to the tabernacle. See 1 Samuel chapters 4 through 6. The Lord subdued their enemies. See 1 Samuel chapter 7 verses 9 through 14. And the children of Israel did put away Balaam and Ashtaroth and serve the Lord only. 1 Samuel chapter 7 verse 4. All Israel from Dan even to Beersheba knew that Samuel was established to be a prophet of the Lord. 1 Samuel chapter 3 verse 20. Like all the nations. As Samuel grew old, a problem arose. As was the custom, he made his two sons judges over Israel. However, his sons walked not in his ways, but turned aside after lucre, and took bribes and perverted judgment. 1 Samuel chapter 8 verse 3. This was a distressful situation for the people and their leaders. To whom or what could they appeal for a resolution? They turned to Samuel and demanded, "Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations." 1 Samuel chapter 8 verse 5. Samuel was displeased by their petition, but not because monarchy is an inherently evil form of government. We know from King Mosiah that if it were possible that we could have just men to be our kings, then it would be expedient that we should always have kings to rule over us. Mosiah chapter 29 verse 13. What displeased Samuel was why Israel wanted a king, that we may be also like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. 1 Samuel chapter 8 verse 20. They had set their hearts on an earthly king to lead them in battle and give them a sense of national identity, security, and unity. Their request reflected a lack of faith and trust in their covenant relationship with the Lord. Did they think the Lord was not king enough? He had never broken his promise to be their protector if they would but believe in him, and had repeatedly demonstrated his power for their sakes, including giving them a recent victory over the Philistines. Israel also wanted an earthly king so they could be like the kingdoms around them, whose leaders exhibited an image of magnificence and ceremonious style. Israel wanted a celebrity king who would be a showpiece for their vanity and worldliness, power and grandeur. Through Samuel, the Lord warned the people that such a king would come at a high cost. He would draft their sons to plant his fields and make war for his selfish ambitions. He would make their daughters menial laborers in his kitchens for his parties, and he would tax everything they owned to support himself and his friends. See 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 11 through 17. Finally, the Lord promised them that if they persisted in desiring an earthly king instead of him, he would not hear them in the day of their oppression and misery, a principle reinforced in modern scripture. They were slow to hearken unto the voice of the Lord their God. Therefore the Lord their God is slow to hearken unto their prayers, to answer them in the day of their trouble. Doctrine and Covenant, section 101, verse 7. In an act of great selfishness and pride, the people refused to obey the Lord and his prophet. They wanted to be like everyone else. They wanted a king the world could admire rather than the unseen king, who could only be known by faith. Hearken unto their voice, said the Lord to Samuel, and make them a king. 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 22. Thus Israel changed its form of government, a change that lasted until their scattering more than 400 years later. The Lord revealed to Samuel that Saul was to be their first king. See 1 Samuel chapter 9. Samuel anointed Saul, and the Lord gave him a new heart. See 1 Samuel chapter 10. For clearly the Lord wanted his people to have righteous, inspired kings. More than 40 kings ruled over the Israelites, some over United Kingdom, but most over a divided people, living in two different kingdoms. The legacies of their kings are for the most part a fulfillment of the Lord's warning words to Samuel. Even those kings whose hearts were pure at one point in their lives, such as Saul, David, and Solomon, succumbed to idolatry, gross sin, and wickedness. Like the world, members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints are the modern covenant people of the Lord and are subject to many different political systems throughout the world. Spiritually, members of the church have prophets who warn and counsel against those influences and practices that will harm us and bring us into bondage. See, for example, for the strength of youth. These warnings are given to help us avoid the attitudes and habits that make us like the rest of the world. For example, after citing some problems that beset families today, such as drugs, alcohol, harsh language, and child and spouse abuse, President Gordon B. Hinckley said, "I lift a warning voice to our people. We have moved too far toward the mainstream of society. We have been repeatedly counseled against adopting the philosophies of the world and participating in its fads and styles. Our prophets plead for us to keep the Sabbath day holy, shun inappropriate media, and avoid debt. Too many ignore the counsel because being acceptable to the world seems more attractive and fun than being acceptable to the Lord. In times of personal crisis, some turn first to the arm of flesh." See Doctrine and Covenant, section 1, verses 19 through 20. Reaching out for comfort from a worldly king, such as misguided friends and leaders, food, drugs, or pornography. These may lead to some social, emotional, or financial successes, but eventually end in bondage to sin and the loss of what is more important in life. If we ignore these warnings in order to be like the world, we will suffer the same consequences as ancient Israel. We will lose our sons and daughters, lose the possessions we covet, and become slaves to our new king. The prophet Joseph Smith taught, "The devil has no power over us only as we permit him." The scriptures repeatedly promise that those who look to the Lord can be spared unnecessary trials and suffering and receive great blessings. See Alma chapter 38, verse 5. If we will but come to Christ, that he may be our king, casting our burdens upon him, he will fight our battles and give us rest. Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 through 30. Doctrine and Covenants section 98, verses 33 through 38. And section 105, verse 14. This does not mean that we should just sit back and let him do everything. We must live in such a way that we may find favor in his sight. 1 Nephi chapter 17, verse 35. Our interest must be in pleasing him, not the world. The prophet Nephi understood the nature of the relationship that must exist between us and the Lord in order to retain him as our king. The tender mercies of the Lord, he said, are over all those whom he hath chosen, because of their faith, to make them mighty, even unto the power of deliverance. 1 Nephi chapter 1, verse 20. Gospel topics: worldliness, temptation, Old Testament, Jesus Christ. Note: Peggy Furness Lee is a member of the Cary Second Ward, Raleigh, North Carolina stake. End of note. For more on this topic, see Richard G. Ellsworth, The Tragic Dimensions of Saul, Ensign, June 1990, pages 36 through 40. Marion G. Romney, Seek Not to Counsel the Lord, Ensign, August 1985, pages 2 through 5. Marion G. Romney, The Perfect Law of Liberty, Ensign, November 1981, pages 43 through 45. End of the article, A King for Israel, by Peggy Furness Lee.